Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
And I really believe we're in. I think our strength of record metric is really good. In fact, I do know it's better than 17 other teams that are either safely in or on the bubble. I think we're way in.
Yes, day three of the hope, belief. Maybe Timmy Miles knows something we don't. Or maybe not. Maybe it's just a great campaign start. Welcome in to Wednesday at Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the pride of Chicago, Danny Burke. He did not bring me any Chipotle today. He is grounded. You're welcome to chime in. Can tap the line. Schilling Bridge Cork and Tap House lets you do that. 466-3776. 466-3776. 1-800-825-5865. Can find us on Twitter. At Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio. We're at Danny Burke 5. That's completely legal for you to do. We'll get caught up with Mike Babcock, HailVarsity.com and magazine, historian, author, and Hall of Famer. We'll talk to him about Nebraska basketball, Husker baseball. Get Babber's thoughts on the knee era. You know that ongoing series is happening with Dirk. But I tell you what, Babber's covered a lot of Nebraska, a lot of Danny Knee. Excited to talk some of that with him. Mike Shewhart going to be with us. Shuey Husker Golf, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, 30 minutes away. And then we'll spend some time on the NFL draft, the combine done. Just wrapping up, Tanner Lee's guy, Steve Calhoun, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy. Coach Steve will be with us in 1 hour. Again, room for you, 466-377-6800-825-5865. Can email me, chris@hailvarsity.com. Okay, so here's how the progression has gone. Monday, life sucks, Nebraska's out. Tuesday, Tim Miles doubling down. Tim Miles proclaiming that things are going to be okay.
Here's what I know. We're in.
Today, that has grown. It has grown to four sites that say Nebraska is in the field of 68. Does Tim Miles know something that Nebraska fans don't? Or is it just wishful thinking? I don't go JFK conspiracy often, but I do like playing the game. And here's what I'm wondering. Tonight you have this contest between Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. Now you see it happen a lot of times in bowl games where you get some juicy matchups. Okay? Someday the day will come where you have Stanford against Michigan, preferably in a Rose Bowl for both. But Jim Harbaugh against his old team. Or Oklahoma and Big Game Bob against Alabama, because damn it, Saban hates that hurry-up offense. You just got some too-good-to-be-true matchups sometimes. And I was hoping that Craig Smith and South Dakota win last night. They didn't. South Dakota State's back in. They're damn good, so props to them. But from a play-in standpoint, it would have been cool to see Nebraska v. South Dakota. But how about this from a play-in standpoint if Nebraska gets in? And Oklahoma continues to do Oklahoma Sooner things. Would you love Oklahoma-Nebraska in Dayton on Tuesday? Could you feel that? I think you could. And if you're the selection committee and you're kind of making your determination of the 36 at-large teams, You're playing games. I don't know if they're the last team to get in. Let's talk about that, Danny. What do you think? Somebody needs to ask Rass if the 212 seeds are the last two teams to get in as at-large candidates. Or is it the rest of the 12 seeds combined with the 11 seeds? That's what I'm wondering. Because if the 212 seeds that are the play-in game aren't the last two to make the cut to Studio 54, then you can tell the two play-in teams that you've made a determination on that you're in, as long as you don't tell nobody. That's what I'm wondering. Yeah, travel arrangements, selection shows is Sunday. God forbid in March weather you don't get to the play-in game due to weather, wherever you're traveling from. Am I making sense here, or am I putting the tinfoil hat on?
No, you're making sense. I don't think they're the last teams in.
The 12s, the play-in 12s.
Right, yeah, I don't think they would be the last teams in because they're not, you know, they're not the worst team or the weakest teams with the weakest schedules necessarily.
They've just jerked with you quite a bit this year.
Right, and it's all just kind of to even out the playing field and whatnot in a way, and I don't know, however they incorporate that.
The vibe I've always thought, the 12v12 is you stick someone from a non-Power 5. If you're a Power 5 in the play-in game, you are one of the last amigos to get in. But maybe that's the case, and you're in. That won't change. And here's some information. Get your flights booked. Tell the team. Don't tell anybody. Do you think anything's divulged ahead of time? Especially in lieu of 3 years ago when the bracket came out an hour and a half before Selection Sunday?
Yeah,
and Frank Martin went ballistic.
Yeah, I feel like there's just too much that could happen this
weekend.
Too
much could go wrong.
Right, exactly. So I feel like it's a little too early, but maybe there's a little tip like, hey, if so-and-so happens, or like if this team meant to do or ends up doing something crazy, then you're going to be in.
I don't know. Part of me, if I'm putting percentage numbers down here, Nebraska's percentage to get in was 79.3% yesterday. It's now over 80. I don't think anything's been divulged. I think this is Tim Miles shouting from the rooftops, get people thinking, get committee members talking, get committee members to hear from people that they know, who they know, who they know. And here's Tim's belief as he ended the interview with Pizzo yesterday.
When I look at things, I believe that the committee made up of a lot of administrators, people who know the business, been around coaches, some that were coaches. You know, we're still receiving votes in the coaches' poll. You look at John Beilein and Tom Izzo, all these guys are saying that's a tournament team. You know, we go beyond the eye test. I think the proof's in the pudding. We lost out on some opportunity. You know, I'm not sure that one shot that Kansas takes to beat us makes 15 other teams leapfrog us in this tournament.
Great take. We're avoiding the elephant. You got beat by Michigan very soundly on Friday. And that's what this thing is. It's about give and take. It's about taking them from one pot to the other and trying to make things as smooth as possible. What do you need tonight? Well, you probably need Oklahoma to get beat. I don't think Oklahoma State's really a serious bubble team. You need UCLA and Arizona to fall quickly. You need Notre Dame to get knocked out. BC did you solid. They beat North Carolina State earlier. Arizona State lost or is about to lose. I'll check here during the break to Colorado. So do the Sun Devils get in or hang in or hang on? Do they become now Dayton material? See, and that's what's so weird here about these sorting mechanisms that will be needed all of Sunday by the committee. You need Syracuse to get just plowed by Carolina tonight. just to keep things and momentum out of the arms of some teams that are either in front of you or right there with you on the bubble. See, the good part of this here is you can't change any minds right now if you're Nebraska, one way or the other. You kind of made a final statement that you're a bubble team. You're way different at home than you are on the road or in neutral games against primetime opponents. There is that fact. But you can't really do more damage now. I'm beginning to feel like the out of sight, out of mind reality of Nebraska right now. You're just sitting in the clubhouse right now. You didn't finish the game like you needed to. Some putts were off. But there's other dudes that could have a lot worse scores and have a lot worse scores recently to be the topic of conversation. And all you got right now is your coach out there reminding folks, look what we did to a good Minnesota, a good Gopher team. Yeah, cut three, Danny. I'm going to get you some Chipotle.
Well, I believe that those committee members will look at that as a high-level win because we played the game. It happened. Now, that's not to say the same thing. Providence is sitting there, and they're in a situation where they lost to Minnesota at that same team, and they're showing out as a bad loss, like a quad four loss. That shouldn't be shown there either. And that's an all equity and fairness to everybody involved, but we beat an excellent Minnesota team. If that's not a top 50, top 100 win, if you just look at the old general terms they used to use, I don't know what it is, but it's certainly not a quad three win or quad four win or whatever it looks as it is now.
Things are changing. You're Arizona State. You're going to point to the win at Fog Allen. Keep us out of Dayton, please. Ignore our 8-11 conference record. Remember the good times. Forget the fact that Arizona, in the midst of controversy, has backhanded us twice. I'll say this, Bobby Hurley is phenomenal TV. He is a gray-haired version of Bo on the sideline in basketball. It's pretty good TV. His snarl has been perfected since he ran point for Duke back in 92. It's pretty good. So we'll see where things are at. Well, the biggest thing I take away, too, is I think Tim Miles going public with a lot of things yesterday on BTN and on social media. I think he's trying to take the stress, the worry, the pit of one's stomach that's being eaten away with worry and stress and frustration. I think he's trying to take that off of his players' shoulders. On top of remind folks that, yeah, we left a smelly one, but it doesn't stink anymore because that was a week ago against Michigan. What do your sick Delta buddies say, Danny? What's the college crowd feel? Tim knows we're in. Tim knows Nebraska's in. Tim's campaigning. Danny Burke says play-in game. Where are you?
I mean, everyone all had the same thought, of course, going into the tournament, you know, at least get that one win right now.
Are you wore out by this yet?
Right. And so now everyone's just like, Tim Miles is getting everybody's hopes up and the projections getting everybody's hopes up. I'm more afraid that like everyone's so excited about just getting in that if we do get in, I don't want us to get pummeled in that first game because we just spend so much time focusing on if we're going to get in or not. But I really just think it comes down to what happens at the end of this weekend, not more so that it's definitive now. I think we're really going to have to wait until
you're waiting for help.
Second, yeah. Like, okay. We're going to really have to see what happens. And if one team maybe upsets in one of the tournaments or whatnot, you know, you never know.
I don't know. Well, we'll talk to Babbers about this. Mike Babcock at HaleVarsity.com and Magazine. Coming up in about 5 minutes, get his take on where Nebraska's at. And if there's some fatigue here, I apologize, but that's what is kind of front and center, this waiting game. This waiting game of Sunday to be. Your coach preaching positivity. your team being good enough to play well in the tournament. I think they'll get a breath of fresh air if they do get in and if it is play-in game. What the hell do they got to lose? You're in the play-in game. Just go do your thing. They have not played well away from home when pressure has been very, very evident about the situation. You can go do the play-in game with minimal pressure. You can absolutely just go do it. The bigger concern's the give-a-damn level of the NIT, to be fair. Mike Babcock on the way. Steve Calhoun, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy on the way. You can email us, chris@halevarsity.com. Do you think Tim Miles knows something that we don't about Nebraska's fate? Sauter Heyman knows something about diamonds. Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds, 100% real diamonds grown in a lab. And they have all the characteristics of earth-mined diamonds, and many customers, they'll tell you, they're much more beautiful. They're eco-friendly. They're 100% sustainable. They're 10 to 40% less than traditional earth-mined diamonds. And come see why pure-grown diamonds have become some of the biggest and best sellers at Sauter Heyman. 12th and O, downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln around West in Grand Island. Log on today, SauterHeyman.com. Mike Babcock up next with Hail Varsity.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Good to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt. Shuey's wandered in. I mean, we're talking the mother of all approach shots. Just boom. Right here, we welcome in Hall of Famer, historian, author, and just awesome work with HailVarsity.com and magazine. Mike Babcock with us at MD Babs on Twitter. Babbers, you ready for some baseball? How are you?
I'm ready for some baseball. Yeah, it's baseball weather. I'm about froze to death today and going out there talking to Darren Erstad and a couple of players. The older you get, the harder it is to deal with that cold weather, I guess. That's where it stands.
No, I don't blame you, man. And I was a kid, and for some reason, my dad and his buddies would, the old Buck, Belzer, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it was three people. And it was cold, and this might have been during the, I wasn't around with the Pete O'Brien era, but maybe mid-80s. So you go check out a game, and it's one of those, you know, the day before it's awesome in March, and then it turns into Nebraska on you the day later when you buy baseball tickets. So there's three of you huddled around. You need a campfire in a garbage can type scene. But yeah, it's you know, welcome to baseball. We'll get to hoops in a minute, but you know, weather permitting, how do you feel about this weekend for Nebraska and what's coming into town that kind of intrigues you?
Well, you know, the Huskers were kind of scuffling there with Wichita State those first two games, and it's a good Wichita State team. There's no question about that. But, golly, you know, over the weekend, I think Wichita State hit three grand slams, and the Huskers were down 7-2 on Sunday and came back and won that game 10-9 in 10 innings. So, you know, I think that it probably illustrates that this is a scrappy team. But as Darren Erstad said today, you know, this team's going to be up and down. There are going to be some stretches. And you know, they've got a lot of games here to play in a very short period of time now. I think 9 games in the next 11 days. The pitching staff, you know, they're trying to find some identity there because they've had injuries. We've talked about that. There are just a lot of things that maybe at this point in the season, and it's still early, obviously, but I think they're still looking for, you know, how the pitching staff is going to shake out. And really, I think they're still looking for how they want to play defensively and how they want to, you know, the batting order, who's going to hit where. So there are some things that they got to get figured out because after this series and then they got 5 more games at home, non-conference. Then they go on the road for a couple of games at Oral Roberts, I think. And then they come, you know, then they start Big Ten play against Minnesota yet this month. So there are a lot of things. It happens pretty fast. And they got to get some things figured out. But, you know, at least they're 500, a little over 500 here, one game over, going into this stretch. So, you know, they need to work some things out.
Mike Babcock's with us, HaleVarsity.com and Magazine. A few minutes here on Husker Baseball. How big was Sunday's comeback? I mean, did that give a shot of confidence and kind of stabilize things, preventing maybe more of a down-in-the-dumps feel for this team?
You know, that's a good question, Smitty. And, I don't know if it stabilized things, but it's certainly, you know, coming off of a 9-1, 6-3, coming off those two losses. It was big. And then, really, four innings and you're behind 7-2. You figure at that point, considering you've just been outscored, 15-4 in the first two games, mm-hmm. Your mindset maybe has taken a pretty good hit there. Yet the Huskers came back, scored five runs, tied it up. And then you drop down by two again, and you get a home run from Rapinski with a runner on base, and then Jesse Wilkening hits a home run in the 10th, and you get two good innings of relief from Jake Hohensee, who has obviously stepped up as the closer. It would be a different situation if you had just come home and you had scuffled through three of those games at Wichita State. And it's a good Wichita State team. But, I think they needed that. Erstad said that he didn't have any doubt that it was a scrappy team and they wouldn't quit. But still, you don't know. You cannot quit and still not get it done on Sunday. So I think it was pretty important there, and I think it's pretty important to get a good start here against Cal Poly and then Northern Colorado next week and Northwestern State next week. So there's a chance to build some momentum here. But they're going to need that going into the Big Ten play.
Mike Babcock, few minutes with us, HaleVarsity.com and Magazine at MD Babs on Twitter. Babbers, let's talk a little Nebraska basketball. Where do you sit right now with Nebraska and Miles being as positive as he's been on social media and with the Big Ten Network interview? Do you think it can – I mean – does it do any harm to campaign like Nebraska is?
No, I don't think it does any harm. I would expect no less from Tim. You know, I think that's the way he should approach it. I'm still trying to figure out this quadrant business, and I'm not very smart.
You're very smart, and the quadrants just keep them away from our eyesight. We don't need them. Just give me top 25, 50, 100. Give me the old school top 100 wins thing.
Yeah. You know, I think, I'll quote this. I was watching an NBA game here not too long ago, and Jeff Van Gundy, who I think is a very, very good analyst and sort of speaks his mind, said something to the effect, the next time he hears somebody evaluate a player or a coach based on analytics, he's going to shoot himself in the head. That's kind of, you know, and I got through calculus.
I didn't.
A couple semesters, but I can't figure all this stuff out. And then it's kind of a mix because you've got some conferences where the conference champ goes, and I think if you apply this quadrant business, the conference champion doesn't belong in the tournament. So you've got a mix of things there. To me, and again, I understand I'm going to defer to people that are smarter than I am, but if you finish where Nebraska did in the Big Ten, you played the teams that you had to play. You know, you got the conference schedule, 13-5. You have an opportunity with that many teams in the tournament. You should have an opportunity. But again, you bring in all the numbers, and you know, and then you were talking about this. There are some of these brackets that have Nebraska. I think Brandon Vogel had it on the website.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Four of them got Nebraska in. You know, so there's not an absolute. It's not like the numbers all come out the same for everybody. I getting back to your question, no, I think Tim Miles is justified in doing it. I think you'd expect the coach to do that, and I don't think it can hurt. You know, I think Nebraska probably deserves some consideration, but. Obviously, a lot of people that pay attention to those numbers are going to disagree with that.
Babbers, I got to get your take here. We got about 3 minutes here, 4 minutes. the Danny Nee era. It's been brought up by Dirk. I loved going to games during the Nee era. What do you remember about the Nee era and Danny and kind of the rise in Nebraska basketball? Does it make you smile when you think about it?
Yeah, it does. It does. And, you know, Dirk's doing a great job with that series. Man, he's done a lot of work with that thing. I think 2 years worth of work that he's put into it. He's interviewed a lot of guys. But, yeah, I did. And I always sort of jokingly said, you know, that people complained about Danny never being able to win a game in the NCAA tournament. And, that, you know, they saw that. They fired him, so they never got there. So
right.
Didn't have to worry about whether they were going to win one or not. But, you know, those four consecutive NCAA tournaments, that was a nice run. And probably the best of those four teams, the one that went 26-8, the first of them, you know, should have got by Xavier and didn't. But those things happen. And, yeah, it was really an enjoyable time to watch the Huskers because they, you know, they were relevant nationally in a tough conference. You know, that the Big Eight was no slouch, and there were a lot of characters, which comes across in Dirk's series. Coaches, you know, with strong personalities, and you know, the sitting down Norm business at Missouri, and
is there a coach that
Billy Tuff at Oklahoma?
Is there a coach that you got a kick out of in the Big Eight?
Well, I always got a kick out of Billy Tubbs, you know, and I think this was recounted the anecdote. I think they were playing Missouri, and Oklahoma fans in Norman, and they were throwing stuff on the floor or whatever, and so they told Billy Tubbs to get on the microphone and calm down the fans. So he got on the microphone and said, "No matter how bad the officiating is, don't throw things on the floor." So he got another technical foul. I think he had a couple technicals there.
He got launched.
You know, he was kind of a character. You don't let you talk to one player. That was his captain. He was the one that said that Danny Nee better get better players or he thinks he's going to beat Oklahoma. But Norm Stewart was good. You know, sit down, Norm. That was always exciting. The Antlers were totally out of control at Missouri. They went over they were over the top. That was unacceptable, I thought. Johnny Orr was a character where Johnny Orr said in recruiting, if they ever, NCAA ever looked into what you did, you tell them one of two things: either I don't recall, or I'll never do it again.
Johnny, that's a good answer. Yeah. I don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I won't do it again. Sorry about that. That's
yeah, pretty good. Yeah. I don't recall, or I'll never do it again. Yeah, that was always fun. So you know, it was really interesting to deal with those coaches and it was a fun time. And you know, the thing about it is that you know, those teams featured Nebraska guys,
mm-hmm.
and you know that. That was part of the appeal, I think, and part of what made it so good. You know, Rich King, Bruce Chubb, Eric Pinkowski was South Dakota guy, but I believe his dad was from Scotts Bluff.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
yeah.
He had Nebraska connections. Jerome Boone's dad played at Omaha Tech. Eric Strickland was in there, you know, a Bellevue guy.
Mm-hmm.
Briefly, Andre Woolridge, and then he transferred out of here. Terrence Badgett.
Omaha South,
You know, Rich King. I think that I still think that that's important. You know, that to have that Nebraska connection there somehow, and that was a good time for Nebraska basketball. There were some really good players that came out of the state.
Mike Babcock's with us. HailVarsity.com. Babbers, good stuff. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Hey, great talking to you, Smitty.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Good to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke, the pride of Chicago. And it is that time, the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shuhart is in. Shuey, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, getting ready for a little thaw. It was nice, and then it wasn't, and then it'll be nice again.
It's coming. I saw the forecast. It looks like it's going to be nice coming up here. So
good.
Yeah, getting a little itchy, man.
I bet you are.
It's that time. It's like, come on. We need some nice weather.
No, it'll be good. Wilderness Ridge has some awesome offers for you with TaylorMade. Buy three, get one free. Purchase 3 dozen personalized TP5 or TP5X golf balls at $44.95 per person and get a personalized dozen free. When you personalize it, you know that's yours. That's 3 feet from the cup when you're ready to putt in for bird. You can call in today, 402-434-5106, or stop by, place your order. Don't forget about the March Membership Madness. Purchase a regular membership at Wilderness Ridge and golf the Lincoln Public Courses for free. Some exceptions apply. Again, 402-434-5106. That's an awesome deal.
Sure. Yeah, man. You know what? You would think if you personalize your golf balls that you would get more of them back when you lost.
Yeah.
You never do, do you?
No.
Why is that?
Well, because some of us let, you know, Junior tee off and they go swimming.
Oh, they're unretrievable.
Yeah. Or guys just change their name per hole.
That's right. Sometimes they want to lose that guy and have nobody know who you are.
That's right. I just had a great meeting, boss. Had an awesome meeting and sit down with the client. Yeah, how is number 8? How's it breaking? Where's the pin placement this time? I saw you. But in all honesty, tell us what's up with Husker Golf, Shuey. This spring break's around the corner. How are you guys getting ready?
We're getting ready for spring break. We leave next Wednesday, so we head down to Phoenix again. We're going to play Notre Dame's tournament in Phoenix at the beginning part of spring break. And then we head down to Tucson and play a tournament at the end of our spring break down in Tucson. So just kind of, I know we had a great week last week. So just kind of building upon that, you know, maintaining a lot of the good stuff that we did and keep that excitement and keep working on those things and carry that over into our spring break and see if we can put together 2 really good tournaments in a row, which we should. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, we've been working really hard and, you know, good tournaments do some crazy things, you know. It's like builds a little confidence. And when you get a little confidence, you know, you think you can do a lot of things. So
you talk about kind of building confidence, but also you look at momentum and how important that is in sports, whether it's a 10-2 run in basketball in March during the tournament, or you get some solid starting pitching on the mound. Out on the diamond, you know, football special teams is a huge momentum shift opportunity. Let's touch on momentum for golf a little bit. And it's got to happen, and it's going to happen through just kind of being consistent. That said, are there some moments that you remember about kind of riding that momentum? You hit a shot or two that kind of propels you.
Yeah, I mean, that's key. Just like any other sport, and golf is the same. You know, it's like if you get something going in a round, you will always be faced almost inevitably that you need to do something to maintain that, you know. So like in golf, you make a couple birdies, you make 3 birdies in a row, you're going pretty good, you know, and it's like then all of a sudden something happens and you need to, you know, you chip in or you make a 20-footer to save a par. That keeps that momentum going, you know. So it's like you need to do that, you know. You need both ends of it. You need to make some stuff to get the momentum, but you most likely will always come in the course of a round where you're going to be faced with, man, can I do something? I call it damage control, which is you're in a position that you can sustain a bunch of damage. So it's like, man, if you can do something to withstand the amount of damage, you know, and even make a par, I mean, it's amazing how it keeps the momentum going and allows you to be able to do that. So that's one of the keys, is that half the time making a good par or bogey is almost, it's sometimes better than making a bunch of birdies. It sounds weird, but it's like because
explain that one to me.
Just because it keeps the momentum going, it keeps you. If you're doing okay, and you're kind of you know, it's like, well, I might have made a couple of birdies in 9 holes, but you know, if I can make a great bogey, as opposed to make it triple.
Right.
You know, and then I withstood some of that. Then all of a sudden I got 8 more holes and I'm still okay how I'm thinking, my emotions. And then I make another 2 birdies in the next 8 holes. Well, you overcame that bogey with 2 of the birdies. You know, you can't overcome a triple because you got to make 3 birdies just to get back to even. You got to make 4 to get ahead of the game. Well, pretty soon you're going to run out of time.
And holes.
So it's like you have to be able to sustain, you know, again, I call it damage control, which is when you...
That's a lot about what golf's about, isn't it? Just damage control?
It really is. I mean, you're always going to be put in a compromised position out there. I don't care how good you are. You're going to be put into some or worse than others. You know, that's what tour players are so amazingly good at if you watch them. I mean, they just don't make very many bogeys. And the reason for that is because they have incredible creativity. They have incredible short games. They have incredible belief and desire that, man, they're going to make par. Even though it looks like there's no way they're going to make a par, they will make a par. You know, Tiger was the king of it, and he made the most spectacular pars half the time, you know, whether it's making a 30-footer, whether it's chipping in, whether it's hitting it close from a place that you shouldn't even be able to get it on the green, you know, and that's really what it is. Because them playing golf for a living, bogeys are costing them money.
Mm-hmm.
So bogeys are not acceptable. You can't make bogeys. That's just the way it is. So they learn, man, bogeys, that's not good. I'm losing
bogeys
money.
Bogeys are bad.
Yeah. So there becomes a little different emphasis on not making them out there. So, and it's like they just become very good at being able to do it. You know, it becomes a mental thing. It's like, can you will a ball in the hole? I don't know if there is such a thing, but I believe there's something to that in how you go about. You know, I cannot make a bogey. See, they look at it different than an amateur golfer. Amateurs go, oh, I don't want to make a bogey. I can't make a bogey. And they put so much pressure on themselves mm-hmm. that they can't function. A highly skilled golfer is complete opposite. You can tell him you can't do that. The more you tell him he can't do it, the more he's going to show you that he can do it. And you put a livelihood on it that it's like,
sure.
You know, I cannot afford to make bogeys because it's costing me money, you know. So, and the belief system is just so different. And you learn to develop that, you know, to get to that point where it's like, you don't like making bogeys. I mean, I don't like it. Man, it's not fun. It's costing me strokes. And it's like, I'm not going to do it, you know, and not be afraid of them. Just be determined that I'm not going to do that. So, yeah, sometimes you have to be more, that is actually more beneficial at times in the course of a round, you know, because you save something.
That can actually start you.
And that, exactly.
Give you some momentum. That's Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf Segment. Subscribe today and find out more about membership benefits and pricing with Wilderness Ridge, wildernessridgegolf.com. We'll wind down hour one next.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Coming up 10 minutes away, Steve Calhoun, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy. His thoughts on the top quarterbacks in the NFL draft, his thoughts on his protege, Tanner Lee, getting back from Indy. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf, is in studio. Husker Golf. Shu, I got to talk to you. You're a huge basketball fan.
Yeah, man.
You love March. You love hoops.
Yeah, I do.
You're going to get the madness going. I know you guys are on spring break for a couple of tournaments in Phoenix and in Tucson. You just told us about that. But how you feeling about Nebraska basketball?
I mean, I like where they're at. I wish they were in the tournament. You know, it's kind of perplexing to me that they're not.
Right.
You know, if you go back a year, 2-3 years ago, they'd be in every time with no discussion. Mm-hmm. But now they got this quad, this and that, and it's like I don't.
Does the quad wear you out?
Yeah.
Are you in the Babber camp?
Yeah, it's driving me crazy. I just don't. I can't figure it out. You know, it's like I think I read somewhere like last when they were playing Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
So Penn State playing us at home, if they beat us, they get
counts as a 2.
A 2 or a 1. And if mm-hmm. we lose to Penn State, it's like a 4 or something. I'm like going, well, I don't get this. I don't understand it. Why does one get to benefit so much more than the other? And I'm like, I don't get it.
Home and road and neutral.
Yeah.
Totally get it.
Again, the metrics. It's like you're kidding me.
So are you in favor of a Nebraska-Oklahoma play-in in Dayton?
That'd be fun. That'd be awesome to watch. That'd be
great.
Cool. That'd bring some excitement, you know,
right.
Some energy. you know, some people would want to watch that. You know,
how about the setup that you're going to know if you're in or you're out in the first 10 minutes with a live studio audience?
I don't know. I had to see how that plays out.
Because you had the leak like 3 years ago where,
yeah.
I mean, can you imagine being in Frank Martin's path where they're 28-7 and sorry, South Carolina, you're not in. Yeah. Obviously, a couple years later, they make the Final Four run last season. Yeah. But I
don't know. I kind of used to like it when they'd put somebody in there and then they'd put a team that they're playing. So
yeah.
Like
the reveal like 4 or 5 years ago when Nebraska found out it was Baylor.
I used to like that. So I don't know yet. I got to see how this one plays out.
Okay. You
know, from my understanding, they're going to announce all 64 teams.
Yep, they'll do that.
And then after that, then they'll put them in their brackets.
Yeah,
right?
here's who's in. Here's who you're playing.
So I don't know.
Do you think you'll see Nebraska on the right side of the bubble?
I do. I don't.
You
I
really?
Mean,
okay.
I do. You just
got a gut that says they're going to get in somehow.
I don't. I just find it hard to believe that if in any other year other than this year they would be in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like Coach Miles was talking about. It's like there's never been a team that's won 13 conference games, actually a little less than that, mm-hmm. that's never gotten in the tournament, you know. So it's like, I don't know, unless this is just one of those crazy years, which it sounds like it, you know, is. But I don't know. If you were using this metric system, quad system, would they be in? If you went back to what they did 2 and 3 years ago, I think they would be in without even a question.
Right.
You know, now all of a sudden there's a huge question. It's like, I thought I read somewhere the other day that they're not in and they're like a 4 seed in the NIT. I'm like, are you
quality kidding? Wins is in question and your road wins aren't counted as quality wins. And are you going to count Minnesota when they were awesome and ranked 14th?
Exactly. How do you determine that?
Does one shot make a difference by beating Kansas? Well, yes.
Yeah.
Does that jump you 17 spots?
Is Minnesota a good win or a bad win? I mean, they were ranked in the top 10.
It was a great win at the time.
Now all of a sudden it's a bad win?
I think it's a good win when you had
them
at home. It's Mike Shewhart, Steve Calhoun, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy, Hour 2 on the way with Hail Varsity.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back in Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, quarterback guru, and you can find him on Armed and Dangerous QBS, that on Twitter. It's Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy, Steve Calhoun, as he's getting ready for the NFL draft. They're back from Indy, he and Tanner Lee. Coach Calhoun, how are you, sir? Good to speak with you again.
Yes, sir, Chris. Hey, appreciate you having me on the show. You know, I'm a big fan of you guys. So every time I get interviewed, I'm starting to feel a little bit more and more part of the family.
That's awesome. I mean, family's a great word. I might be black sheep if you ever ask me to throw a football. But I like talking about it. How's that sound? How was the experience, Steve, out in Indy? It's not new for you, but Tanner was out there. He had a chance to kind of show his stuff. There's some good feedback. There's some critiques out there. You know, the NFL draft experts have kind of sounded off. What did you take away with Tanner's performance?
Well, I thought Tanner did, he did unbelievable. I mean, from where I got him 8 weeks ago, there's so many things to work on just from the quarterback position, but we had to find his weaknesses and make them his strengths. That was the one thing as far as his footwork. You know, just getting feedback from NFL scouts and coaches that I talked to, you know, they were concerned about his footwork, which relates to the accuracy issues that they think that he has. So, but, you know, he checked all the boxes on Saturday. I mean, unbelievable arm strength, you know, which everybody already knows. But I got so many compliments on his footwork and his drops and how clean it was. And he did unbelievable in the interviews with the teams and stuff. I mean, checked every box. I couldn't be more prouder of a kid.
Steve Calhoun's with us. Few minutes. Hail Varsity Radio at Armed and Danger QBS. Armed and Dangerous Football is where you can log on as well. And Steve, with Tanner, and people just kind of drool about the size, the prototype, the arm, the touch, the ability to find wide outs and fit the football in the tight windows. With the interview process, what advice did you have for him with that? Because that's pretty trying for a lot of players, is not showing what you can do with the ball, but the sit down and the intimidation factor, depending on what team you're in front of.
Yeah. You know what? We did quite a few, you know, mock interviews where if I was John Lynch or John Elway in the room, or being different coaches, you know, and he had to talk me through, you know, not only every interception, but every question of ball. Like, hey, man, there's a corner and a safety over the top of that receiver. Why'd you try to fit it in there instead of just throwing it to your check down? And so, you know, we went through that, and I just said, hey, just be totally honest, you know, and with your answer. And whether it was, okay, we were down by 14, and I just wanted to make a play just to spark the team, and I was like, hey, that's a great answer. So I said, just be honest and be upfront. But we went through all those details. So, you know, when he answered them, you know, there was no any unpleasant pauses or anything like that. It's just, hey, this is what I was thinking. This is what I did with the ball. And this, you know, if I made a mistake, I came back and I corrected it. So, no, it was really good, though.
Tanner's doing what now as the draft awaits?
Well, he just got back into Lincoln yesterday. He already started to work on his pro day script with his receivers and tight ends and running backs there in Lincoln. I'm flying in on Sunday, so I'll be there till Wednesday. For his pro day on Wednesday, and we're going to go through the script, you know, Wednesday evening and Monday as well, and just do a little bit of a walkthrough on Tuesday, and then he'll be live in front of all the coaches and teams on Wednesday. And I know, again, he's going to put his best foot forward. And now we get to really expand the route tree from the combine, so they really get a chance to see all the different throws that he can make, you know, put some touch on the ball, as well as the 18-yard comeback or the 18-yard in route.
What throw do you think Tanner makes best?
The deep in cut, the 18-yard, the dig route, and the comeback as well. But, I mean, the post or the go ball, I mean, he's really been throwing it great, you know, these last few weeks, really been throwing it great.
Steve, what questions were kind of put to bed, at least partially answered at the combine? You mentioned turning those weaknesses into strengths, and the arm, many folks love Tanner's arm. The footwork when he was harassed was the issue, and I know that's something you guys really focused on, but specifically, what one or two elements did scouts and front office folks kind of communicate to you that said, wow, that's a different Tanner we saw?
I mean, just his footwork. I mean, just how clean it is. I mean, when I first got him, he really couldn't jump rope that well. And I say, hey, this is about to become the same way you're breathing air. This is how, you know, the jump rope is going to be to your feet. So, you know, he really took that seriously and jump rope every day. And from day one to however many days I had, you know, up right before the combine, I mean, you can see his drops are cleaner. He's not as heavy on his feet. He really just, what I call cutting grass when you're dropping, just cutting grass, because your feet is just going right across the top of the grass or the top of the turf. You know, that's the one thing that scouts and coaches were talking to me about, how clean his footwork looked and how much lighter on his feet, which, you know, then translates into his accuracy. Yeah. So those are the concerns, his footwork and his accuracy. But I believe they're all tied together. So I think, you know, we addressed that, and he was able to show that at the combine. And I'm looking forward to his pro day on Wednesday so we can show even more of it.
A few minutes here with Steve Calhoun, Armed and Dangerous Football Academy, armedanddangerousfootball.com, and Armed and Danger QBS on Twitter. Steve's worked with a number of NFL quarterbacks, Russell Wilson, Cam Newton, the Super Bowl champ in Philly. I mean, you name it, yeah. Steve's worked with it. And he's getting ready with Tanner Lee. So what teams have shown interest? Can you be specific? What what organizations have been in touch or are interested in Tanner?
You know, there were three that, you know, that specifically, you know, because I would kind of debrief him, debrief Tanner, you know, after he would come out of interviews, kind of at the end of the night, because, I mean, they have a long day, so I wouldn't be able to catch up to him until about 11:30 at night, you know, or even midnight. And, you know, we just kind of went through, hey, were there any questions that stumped you or anything? And I said, well, what some of the teams that kind of stood out to you that really took an interest? And he had mentioned Buffalo, Baltimore, and Indianapolis. And, you know, that, you know, it could be a team that never even talked to them that really could be interested, but they don't want to show their hand too early. So, but those are the ones that really stuck out in his head. And he said he had really good interviews, and they just seemed like they took, you know, took a liking to him.
Projection is sixth round, maybe a little bit later for Tanner. Have you heard anything before that, Steve?
I think he's going to, I think he's going to surprise some people and be a lot higher than that. I can't really say what round, just because, you know, there's more than just quarterbacks in the draft. You know, there's D linemen, running backs, and tight ends. So, but I think he's going to be a lot higher than that. He showed that he can play at that next level, and there's not much of a drop off in my mind between the first four quarterbacks and Tanner.
No, I mean, from an arm strength and a pro style, you know, I mean, there's fewer Tanners out there than there are the spread quarterbacks, you know?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think, you know, comparing him to, let's say, Josh Allen, what are the differences? I think you put Tanner in Wyoming's offense, or flip it, or even put Josh in Nebraska's offense, and, you know, they have some struggles with the offensive line and protection, stuff like that. And but, you know, I would like to see, you know, those roles reversed and see who could perform better in those situations. So, I, like I said, you know, just going back to the original deal, I don't think there's much drop-off between who they consider the first four guys and Tanner.
Let's spend a little bit of time on quarterback, Steve. You've worked with a number of them, and this is a pretty impressive quarterback class, quarterback draft. I'll go down the list. I want to start with Josh Allen. And Craig Bowles got a couple of quarterbacks between Wentz at North Dakota State and, of course, Allen at Wyoming. And what impresses you and wows you about Josh Allen?
Well, I mean, the first thing is his arm strength. That right there just kind of really, when you see the ball comes off his hand, you know, it makes you stand up a little bit straight and go, wow, okay, I would have loved to see, I want to see more of that. And then, you know, his athletic ability. He's really a good athlete. He's able to extend plays with his legs. And you know, he's a smart quarterback. You know, I got a chance to spend some time with him this summer, as I do with all the quarterbacks down at the Manning Passing Academy. So just being able to talk to him and talk ball with him, you know, that's those are the few things that really stood out that's going to, you know, allow him to be one of the top quarterbacks taken.
Couple of guys from SoCal that you've seen and been around, Rosen and Darnold, SC and UCLA. A thought on each of those guys?
Well, with Sam Darnold, he actually played in high school with my son. So, I mean, they're really good friends. And so I've seen Sam grow through the years from youth football to high school football and, you know, as well through college. So, I mean, you know, everything that they're talking about, the buzz that he has around him, you know, those are all true. He proved it and done well on every level. And then the same thing with Josh Rosen is I have the opportunity to train all their quarterbacks every Wednesday during the season. So from Josh Rosen to Keith Price, who played at UW, and Rial Mitchell, I have a relationship with the head coach and offensive coordinator where they allow me to come in and work with their quarterbacks at St. John Bosco High School. So I'm very familiar with Josh. And, I mean, he was, you know, he's always had football IQ, and people question his passion for the game. I've never would question that at all, because of the amount of work and time he put in, you know, to become as successful as he has. You got to love the game. That's just not a hobby. So I, you know, Josh is going to be, you know, one of the top quarterbacks taken, and he's going to be a franchise quarterback.
Couple of guys that I really loved watching: Baker Mayfield. A thought on Baker, and then Lamar Jackson. He was tremendous at Louisville. And he'll get a chance to shine for someone at quarterback in the NFL. Take me through both those guys and how they translate.
The situation with Baker, he's just an unbelievable football player. If we're just out at the park and we're picking 5-on-5, I'm taking that guy as my quarterback. Whether it's 5-on-5 or 11-on-11, he just has this infectious attitude that people just want to play for him and follow him. He's just such a natural leader. And people say, he's cocky. I'm like, well, I would rather have, you know, I don't think it's cocky. I think it's just confident. You know, but to some people, like, I believe, like, oh, man, he's really confident in his ability. But to other people, that's, he's cocky. So with that, I mean, he's going to be a real spark for some franchise going in and playing for them. And then with Lamar, he just has some unbelievable physical skills that you can't teach. I couldn't teach him from the quarterback position. He just has some God-gifted talent where he can run and throw. So I'm if in the right situation with Lamar, if he's able to develop with a great quarterback coach, you know, like a Sean Payton, or even in Kansas City, something like that, got, you know, coaches that can really develop those guys, he's going to be a special player in the NFL.
Last thought here is Steve Calhoun with his quarterback guru, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy, working with Tanner Lee. The Hawaiian connection that you have, you've spent time over in the islands tutoring quarterbacks. You see the next crop of quarterbacks. You know that the Mariota factor is very real. The Tua factor is very real for kids playing football on the island. Let's talk about Scott Frost and how he's recognized over there with what the work he put in with Mariota. Obviously, Marcus is a tremendous talent, but does Nebraska have some pop over there with Frost as the head coach?
Yeah, I mean, I think Nebraska has some pop, you know, around the country with, you know, the resume that Coach Frost has built from being at Oregon and UCF, and mm-hmm. you know, but just speaking on the islands, I mean, it's unbelievable the quarterback play. I was over there 6 years ago when I did my very first camp, and it was like, okay, yeah, quarterback, but they're more linemen, linebackers, D-line, you know, what they're known for. But now with the success of Marcus and Tua, I mean, every young boy carries around a football and want to throw it around at the park. And this, you know, myself and other quarterback coaches that has been going over there and been able to teach the fundamentals of the quarterback position. So it's really gone through the roof. You're going to be hearing about some really good quarterbacks over the next few years coming out of Hawaii.
That's got to be exciting. And Bama's been over there. Nebraska 15, 20 years ago really went hard after some of the linemen. But, yeah. You know, the quarterback spot, though, I mean, it seems like it's quarterback crazy. And with Mariota, Steve, I mean, how much time does he spend giving back to the islands? I mean, he's such a pretty charismatic guy. It seems to me like he'd be back over there quite a bit doing camps and clinics. Is that accurate?
I know he gives back quite a bit. But, you know, he does have a full-time job. So, you know, over there, he's such a rock star. And, you know, they do give him his privacy, and he's allowed to work. But it's a lot of family that wants to see him and be around him because, you know, the Polynesian culture and the Hawaii culture is really family-oriented and driven. So he does spend some time and work with young quarterbacks. But I know he's over here on the mainland, out here in California in particular, working on his craft so he can get the Titans to that next level that they're striving to get to.
Steve, we'll get caught up again. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Absolutely. No problem.
Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy, Steve Calhoun, good stuff. We'll talk some NFL next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Good stuff from Steve Calhoun, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy. He knows or has worked with so many, from Josh Allen at the Manning Passing Academy to tutoring Darnold, who was the high school quarterback at the same high school his son played at, to Tanner Lee. His pro day is going to get rocking here for Nebraska next week. Great to be back with you on Hail Varsity Radio. 466-377-6800, 825-5865 can tap the line. Schillingbridge Cork and Tap House lets you do that. I want to spend a few more minutes here on Nebraska basketball and what Nebraska basketball is trying to become. that is a consistent team for March, a consistent tournament team in March, either NIT or NCAA. And yes, we're playing the waiting game for Sunday, Selection Sunday, another year of Selection Sunday with ESPN Lincoln. And you're just not sure where Nebraska is going to be. Started the show off asking the question, does Tim Miles know something we don't? Wishful thinking says, yes, he knows there's a play-in game. Reality says, I'm and this team's in trouble getting in. So it's time to get on the old bully pulpit. We can't say bully anymore. Time to get on the old pulpit. Make folks aware about the good in Nebraska. And one thing that I've been kind of hearkening back to, and we've spent some time with, we asked Babbers about it today. We talked to Dolman yesterday. We'll have Coach Smith on tomorrow. Jeff Smith, Hall of Fame coach and a former assistant to Denny. I go back to the knee era, and part of it is because of what's been in Dirk's series, right? And that's something that really hits home with me because of how much fun and how it locked me into Nebraska basketball, growing up, going to those games, living those teams. Two dear friends sold the Danny Knee ties. I mean, it's pretty cool. And the one thing that I need to highlight and stress, and I think you've seen examples of it this year with Nebraska's team that you had back during the knee era, was guys that were assistants and guys that could X and O and guys that could be there to buffer the head coach. And I absolutely believe you need that, and you might need it more now than you needed it back then. And if you get and sit down and have a beer with some of Danny's guys, be it Pike or Chubbuck or Bo Reed or Strick, or pick some of the guys. I mean, they loved the ride they were on, but man, there was some turbulence while you were in the air. And that's just because of the coach's personality and how this is business and I'm going to ride you. And I think lost in it was the button pushing was done out of anger and frustration, with the end result hoping to be better performance. Not knowing when to let up or like you hug him or kick him in the butt, but at least there's a hug in part of this equation. Can be upset and kick him in the butt, chew him out, go after him, but there's always got to be a moment where you hug him. And so far in this series, I don't know how much hugging was going on by the head coach, but there was hugging going on with Coach Bargan, with Coach Smith, and being able to, I don't know, keep guys away from Danny and keep Danny away from the fellas. I look at this staff, this group that Coach Miles has. I look at Coach Molinari. I look at Kenya. I look at Coach Michael. And it's a group that's now together their second year. And that's that don't discount the last few years when Nebraska wasn't even sniffing postseason. Finding the right mix. Finding that right mix of assistants that can recruit, can scout, can develop. And I think Coach Miles is back to a good spot with his assistant staff. Not only to buffer him a little bit, because he can be pretty freaking intense, but also get that buy-in and get that development. That's something that you've seen this year. Now, let's talk about what's sustainable and what's likely for Nebraska basketball? And is Nebraska's bread and butter going to continue to be the transfer student? I don't know. Can you do that at this level? Has it worked out for you? Yeah, it worked out for you with a 6-week stretch with Petaway and Walt. Siobhan was here. It worked out for a tournament run. It didn't work out for an entire year after that. You weren't bubble material, but what could have been with Andrew White? Well, Andrew went to Syracuse. I don't think Syracuse got in. They were on the NIT. Did Syracuse get in? I'm asking out loud to Danny Burke. I think they got snubbed, didn't they?
Did they? I'm just so used to them getting in.
Well, they got in one year. They got crushed for getting in one year. They went to the Final Four. It's like 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
There's one year, though, that they got left out. Mm-hmm. So, and this year, hopefully that happens again. But Andrew White ended up leaving, and it didn't work out, and that cost Nebraska. And Coach Miles was very frustrated with that. And we talked to Andrew enough to know that he's pretty frustrated with his situation here. Now, coaches are the coach. They are the, this is just me being old school, what they say goes. There's only a certain amount of, freedom's not the right word, input that players should have. There should be good communication. But if the suggestion slash advice isn't taken, then that's it. You live with it. So moving forward, if you're Nebraska basketball, do you bank on transfers? And this year you're in an upswing. You have Palmer and Cope that have been incredible for you. Doobie has had his moments, found his role. And do you have Palmer and Copeland back? I don't know. I think you go 50-50 on those guys. One stays, one will go. That's just me. I have no proof. I'm just speculating. But Nebraska is nowhere near a tournament team without Palmer and without Copeland. Copeland did a lot of the heavy lifting early during the run. Palmer came on late. Phenomenal 1-2 punch. You've seen the development of Roby. It's been really good basketball. It's been basketball at a high level. It's been basketball at a level that beats Michigan by a 20 spot. Your 4-seed Wolverines. It's a team that played Ohio State within 10. It's a team that was right there with Purdue. And another transfer, Evan Taylor. I'll keep taking Evan Turner, James Palmer's, and Cope's every day of the week. I just don't know that you can get guys like that with that character that have been that selfless as transfers as the clock is ticking. Time in, time out. You've seen the good example this year of transfer students that have all bought in and had good chemistry. And you saw a run with it the previous tournament run with Petaway, with Walt, with Siobhan. And then you saw it unravel and blow up Meth Lab brutally. As a favorite, as a team that was back, as a team that was going to build on a tournament run. Just questions I have out loud, because we're wondering how this thing will shake out. It could be a gift. You could get into a play-in. You could be a team that gets an 11 seed. There's all these ifs out there. And then there could also be this reality that you're in the NIT. But you can still use that. You can win in the NIT. You can figure out what it's like to play in a tournament setting at neutral sites when you're away from Nebraska. I'd assume they'll host a game or two as an NIT team. That will build you up for next year, but what are you going to have back next year? And let's go beyond next year. Let's go on to 2 years from now, beyond. I mean, Miles is your coach. Are we going to see more of the seasons like this? Is this season going to be the norm where, man, you're proud of the team? Man, this team's exciting to watch. This team's talented. This team's in the thick of it. Not every year is going to be awesome. Not every year is going to be the second most wins in program history. I get that. There's going to be some fluctuation up and down. But what's going to be kind of your norm for Nebraska basketball? Is it last year where you're 12-19, you can't have it, you can't deal with it? Is it going to be 22-10? That's a bit aggressive, if you want to be honest. Well, why not? Because it's never happened. Not that it shouldn't or can't, but history says it doesn't happen. So your happy medium of 12-19, 22-10 is 500. Well, that sucks because you're not even in the NIT then. In the typical, really good Big Ten. So what do you got? You got a team that, if they can hover around that 19-10, give or take, I'm good with it. How do you get there? Well, they've kind of struck gold a few times with recruits, and then it's also not worked out for the long term. AgriGold's worked out for quite a while. That soybean sign in your neighbor's field, it's AgriGold, and customers now have access to select soybean varieties direct to their family or farm the AgriGold way. High expectations for every seed that goes into the ground, and our approach to soybeans, no different. High volume, high performance soybeans from a brand you already know. For more info, visit AgriGold.com. Jock Doc Wednesday on the way. Carson Wentz, how's he's doing? Our friends from Lincoln Orthopedic will tell you. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday. Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, Chris. How are you guys doing?
Doing awesome. Great to see you. It's state tournament coverage, man. You got to smile about boys and girls state this time of year.
Absolutely. Those are just fantastic games and always a blast to go down there and watch a bunch of those, for sure.
It is. People are watching Carson Wentz. Let's focus on the Eagles quarterback as he is making recovery and making strides with his return behind center to the Super Bowl champs. Talk to me a little bit here, Dr. Brandon, about what Carson Wentz has been through the last few months post-surgery as he gets ready to quarterback Philadelphia again.
You know, so obviously the big thing is just extensive physical therapy. You know, I didn't hear about any setbacks during his rehab course. Didn't sound like he had any, additional injuries on top of that ACL that I'm aware of, or at least that they had put out there in the press. As most folks well know, with ACL injuries, protocols have, changed drastically in terms of rehab from where they used to be. It's still always interesting to kind of think back historically about where ACLs used to be when they first started doing them. Just anatomic review, ACL stands for anterior cruciate ligament, the ligament that's in kind of the central part of your knee and essentially controls the bottom part of the knee, is the shin or the tibia. It kind of controls that from going forward. But essentially, in the past, when they initially fixed these, they used to place the patients, athletes, into casts for somewhere 4 weeks, sometimes 6 weeks, which just sounds crazy. Now you're talking, have your ACL done, you'll be in a therapy office within a day or two of surgery, obviously depending on if there's any other external damage on top of the ACL. And so for Carson, he's a guy that right away in the physical therapy, a day or two of surgery, pretty intense therapy. Obviously there's some kind of restrictions you do initially with that rehab program, but at the high level he's at, you can imagine the rehab that's going into that is pretty amazing at this point.
Dr. Brandon Seifert with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Carson Wentz, his recovery. So doctors are very, very optimistic that he'll be back for opening day. That said, as late as his ACL happened in the season, that's a lot of hard work by Wentz. They're also talking about him maybe being brace dependent the rest of his career. How do you make that determination with an ACL, with an athlete, with a quarterback – and him needing a brace for the rest of his life?
You know, that's always a big debate in sports medicine, and, you know, what to do about braces and the variety of injuries. As you look at the different ligament injuries in the knee specifically, there's really only been one study that was an okay study that showed that braces helped with ligament injuries, and the ligament that that helped with is called the MCL, or medial collateral ligament, and that was a study done in the past, I think late 70s, early 80s. That study has now been refuted by another study, but there's never been a study that showed wearing a brace will prevent or cut down on the risk of ACL injuries. And so that's kind of where it's at least from a data standpoint. And so when I counsel families about, you know, using an ACL brace, you know, post-surgery or a playing brace after you've had your ACL done, you know, I always go through those studies with them, like, you know, look, there's no studies out there that show that wearing this brace is going to make any bit of difference in terms of cutting down your ACL risk, you know, preventing a tear. But where I think braces are very helpful is it helps with confidence. That's always a big issue with our athletes getting back with ACLs, because our rehab program is so advanced. These grafts are so strong. The devices we use to attach these grafts to the bone are so strong. They really rehab very quickly. And so there's this big debate about, you know, how soon is too soon to return an athlete back? Well, part of the discussion here that's, you know, been a lot better, at least recently, is talking about mentally being ready to return back to play, even though physiologically you may look amazing, you may not be ready mentally. So throwing a brace on top of that for some young athletes really kind of helps them kind of get over that hurdle of some of that mental block of, do I feel confident in my knee? And so from that perspective, it can be helpful. But in reality, there's no studies to kind of back up whether or not it prevents ACL injuries or not. Studies indicate that it doesn't. But when you look at most athletes, my kind of general rule of thumb is I like our kids to wear them for, you know, a year after the surgery. Again, I think it helps with confidence, helps them to get back, I think, a little bit quicker. But again, I kind of leave that decision up to the athlete and their parents, and they can make that call whether or not they want to wear one or not. In his situation, and I think as you look across the board in the NFL, especially from a quarterback position, most of the quarterbacks having ACL surgery done are wearing braces at least that first year. Majority of them kind of keep that brace on. Again, you know, we like to practice evidence-based medicine based on data. There's no data to back that up. So in the end, that'll be a debate they'll have to have with athletic trainers, physicians, and ultimately the athlete himself will have to decide what he wants to do. In Carson's case, if he wants to wear it or not, and for how long.
You have a couple of different surgeons commenting on Carson Wentz's situation and his knee injuries, as it's put, RG3 equivalent. So it's the ACL plus a couple of other ligaments. So the rehab process, in one opinion, will take between 9 and 11 months. And there's other surgeons out there saying that they're optimistic he's back for opening day. What's the truth?
I think opening day is very realistic for him. You know, obviously it's tough being on this side, not knowing the kind of, you know, inner details about, you know, what they saw in surgery, how they fixed it in surgery, and then, you know, kind of same with RG3. But knowing a little bit more about RG3's history, just where I trained at, Carson doesn't sound like, you know, at the same level as his. And so I think from that regard, hopefully the recovery will be faster for him, and hopefully from a functional standpoint, we'll, you know, be maybe in a better position than, say, RG3 was, just with the extensive nature of RG3's injury. But I think it's very realistic to have him back at that point. You know, it's pretty amazing when you look at some of these athletes at his level that have an ACL, and you throw on another, you know, ligamentous injury on top of that with them, and a lot of those athletes, they get back in 6 or 8 months, you know, almost on the pretty similar timetable to some of the other athletes that just had an isolated ACL. So, yeah, I think going longer than 9 months, it's not likely in his situation. The one thing that would really kind of limit that, honestly, would be, you know, did he have a cartilage injury or perhaps a meniscus injury with that? Sometimes those do kind of slow things down a little bit, and so that would probably be the only caveat to that, is with if he had that, will that make him go a little longer? And that would be, you know, a maybe.
Dr. Brandon, got about a minute. What are some possible setbacks through this process?
You know, the biggest thing is, you know, getting his confidence back. You know, how good does he feel about that, you know, that hard three-step drop? It'll take him a while to get that and get the zip on his ball, kind of, you know, using his hips to rotate through. It'll take him a while to kind of get that. The other part with this is always scar tissue. So you start, you know, tacking on those additional injuries to athletes, whether it's meniscus, cartilage, another ligament. Scar tissue becomes more of an issue with that. So working through some of those things, if he develops some scar tissue, that maybe slows his rehab. maybe causes some mechanical symptoms, and you'd be looking at another scope to clean some of that up. That would be probably the biggest setback for him. Another setback would be, you know, how long does it take to get his quad muscle to really respond and fire appropriately? That's always one of those things that does tend to slow down at least the rehab course, and so that'd be another kind of setback he may experience. You know, ultimately for him down the road, how's he going to look down the road? I think he's going to look, you know, pretty well. If it's more, you know, purely ligamentous type injury, should look really well. Obviously, the things that really tend to impact athletes down the road are the cartilage meniscus type issues. And again, I'm not familiar with what all he had in that regard. And then ultimately the question about, you know, what's the re-tear rate on these? The re-tear rate on these is actually quite low, probably less than 10%. It might even be a lot lower than that. The other issue, though, is typically with these athletes, they're usually at kind of a higher risk of tearing the other side. So I think from a re-tear perspective, it's very low.
Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, we'll get caught up again. Thanks so much for your time.
Absolutely, Chris. You guys take care.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Loaded show tomorrow, Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and magazine. We'll run down former Nebraska assistant, longtime coach at Southeast, Jeff Smith, Hall of Famer. Get his take on Nebraska, on the tournament, his time with Coach Knee. So that is on the docket tomorrow, maybe another surprise guest. We'll have high school boys state tournament action. Boys State 2018, 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. I'll have Lincoln Christian, Grand Island Central Catholic. We'll tip that off at 9. And then tomorrow night over on KFOR, we'll have Pius. Jeff Motz will have that game. I'll have East and Brian over on KFOR at 8:45. And then fingers crossed, praying the Nebraska/Lincoln teams advance. That would be pretty awesome. And if you're hearing me in some of the competing regions whose teams are coming to Lincoln, good luck and God bless to your kids, too. I love this time of year, love state basketball, and plenty of games on ESPN and KFOR as we take you through Boys State 2018. Can tap the line, Chilling Bridge Cork and Tap House lets you do that. 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865, or Chris at HaleVarsity.com at Schmidt_radio. You can follow me on Twitter at HaleVarsity. You can follow us on Twitter. Steve Calhoun, tremendous as he talked to Tanner Lee in his trip to Indy with Tanner, the premium quarterbacks in this draft. Calhoun's worked with all of them, knows them. Good thoughts on the draft. Mike Babcock, incredible. Mike Shewhart, fun to catch up with and talk. Shuey, Nebraska Golf, Wilderness Ridge segment today. So a lot of basketball, more on the Nebraska campaign. It's not political season per se, but what leg does Nebraska have to stand on? Is it the shot that didn't go in against Kansas? Is it the win against Michigan? Is it the conference record? Is it the wins against teams you're supposed to beat? I mean, these are all points Coach Miles made to Pizzo yesterday. And it's changed my outlook a little bit, like maybe they're in. Maybe Coach Miles knows something we don't. The more I sit back and think about it, the more likely it is that Nebraska knows they're in trouble. And they need to get the word, the message, the vibe. Don't forget about us. Give us the benefit of the doubt. That type narrative. 100 different ways to look at it. Danny, your plans tonight? Basketball?
I just got some homework tonight. I'm going to be watching basketball, not playing. So,
don't lie to you. You're going to be betting basketball tonight.
Yeah, I already got a couple of them in. So, going to be on the edge of my seat all night.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, back on November 24th, Purdue smoked Arizona. I'm sure you had that one.
No, I actually didn't. But the game I'm interested in, I'm staying away from it, but Oklahoma State. I'm excited for that one. And Notre Dame, Virginia Tech. That'll be a good one, too.
Cheer on them Hokies. All right. Find the podcast, HailVarsity.com, iTunes, or the ESPN Lincoln site or app. Portions of the show on that tomorrow. We'll talk to you at 4. Thanks.